Welcome to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. I'm Steve Alexander, in for Orion Samuelson, and oh boy, what a week we had, huh? For the week, the Dow rose 5.4%, the S&P 500 gained 3.8%, and the NASDAQ advanced 3.8%. On the commodity markets, we saw oil and gold fall, and at the Chicago Board of Trade, corn, beans, and wheat all fell as well. We will talk about those in a moment, but let's go back to the equities. The Dow closed at a record high on Friday, extending the rally after Donald Trump's unexpected victory in the presidential election. The indices also posted sharp gains for the week, with the Dow registering its biggest weekly percentage increase since December of 2011. Again, that increase 5.4%. Based on the numbers at the close, the Dow was up 38.5 points at 18,846. The S&P 500 dropped a few points at 2,164, and the NASDAQ added 28 points, about a half percent, to 5,237. Let's bring in Bob Iacino of Path Trading Partners in Chicago, who was going to try to make heads and tails of what happened this week. Hi, Bob.
How are you, Steve?
I'm doing okay. How about you? You survived.
I'm tired, but I survived.
Yeah. The Dow hit a record close. It advanced about 5.5% for the week, most since 2011. And what was interesting to me was on Monday, the equity markets were higher. They were higher on Tuesday, and then we had the big drop overnight. And then Wednesday morning, here we go again. So what does that tell me, or what can you tell me that means about what the market was expecting on Monday and then how it adjusted come Wednesday morning?
Well, it's interesting, Steve. I've been talking to clients and friends and associates all week about not about the potential for a President-elect Trump victory, which I did not think would happen, for the record, but about if it did happen to buy the dip in the equities for a couple of reasons. Now, I'm patting myself on the back a little bit here, but part of the reason I'm tired is because you never really recover from staying up till 3:30 in the morning watching the kind of moves that we saw while the election results were coming in. That was a much faster drop than I expected, and it was a much faster recovery than I expected. I told people to wait a day or two after the election if Trump were to win to try and dip their toe in the water a little bit. And if you did that, the rally we got when Hillary Clinton was, quote-unquote, exonerated by the FBI was exceeded the very next day by the rally we got from the results of Donald Trump winning. And the reasons behind that to me are the Republican Congress. That to me is the main reason. Because you can say that the Republicans did not really support Trump, and you'd be right, but some of the places where they have common ground, they can now get those things done very quickly. And two specific ones, which would be the repeal of the Dodd-Frank Act. Everyone in the Republican Party seems to support that, and Donald Trump campaigned on it, and cutting corporate taxes. If he were to get both of those things done, Dodd-Frank Act would be just nirvana for banks, because they can get back into businesses that that act forced them out of. And corporate tax cut, if he were to actually get a 15% corporate tax rate, I've heard numbers as high as 30% to EPS over the following quarters. So it really paved the way, whether that makes middle-class America, brings a stronger base to middle-class America, that remains to be seen, but it certainly did give the stock market a pop, and I could see why.
Well, I'd read or heard about trillions of dollars coming back into the economy from overseas. Is that based on that tax cut?
No, that's based on the third thing that seems to be where they have consensus between the Republican Congress and President-elect Trump, and that would be in the overseas money being repatriated at sort of a very low yet punitive tax rate. One of the numbers Donald Trump said is, and, you know, in fairness to the opponents of Donald Trump, he tended to just spew things and not really put forth a detailed plan. So we don't know what it's going to be. But one of the things I did hear is he would say, pay a 10% penalty and bring that money back. It most likely won't be that simple. I mean, if I had a hand in it, it would be bring money back, but commit to putting it towards capital spending and hiring. If they did that, I would let them bring the money back almost tax exempt, because it would be such a boom for middle class and working class people to be able to do that. But we're hearing a 10% penalty. Now, the interesting thing is I'm actually calling him president inflation now, based on what the word inflation truly does mean. Most people believe that inflation means price increases, which that is what it has come to mean. But the definition of inflation is expansion of the monetary base. And if all of this money gets pumped into the economy through tax cuts or capital spending, that money then chases fewer goods, and that causes a rise in prices and a rise in asset values as well. So that's really where that's coming from. If we do see that money come in from overseas, that again could put a spike to inflation, and you're seeing that in the Treasury bond market with the yields on the 10-year jumping up above 215 already.
And is that why we saw gold fall off so sharply today?
It is. Interestingly enough, gold is considered an inflation hedge, but the empirical data doesn't really hold up to that. Gold does not often rally when treasuries are rallying, and treasuries tend to rally when I would look at treasuries for signs of inflation, because the Fed controls short-term rates, not 10 years and out. They just don't. The market does. And if the market is demanding a higher yield on 10 years worth of investment, then that means that they see that that money at the end of that 10 years is not going to be worth as much. And that's a sign of inflation. So, yes, gold has been sold off basically because it's been a catastrophe trade. There have been some people, I'm not amongst these people, that say, you know, Donald Trump in the White House means nuclear war. It doesn't to me. I think that's ridiculous. But those people would have been buying gold when Trump got elected. The sell-off in gold is dollar strength and sort of the calming of the overall markets, taking that sort of catastrophe hedge out of the market.
Well, Mr. Trump's platform, I guess, or his campaign promises, I'm not even sure they were promises, but his campaign rhetoric involved infrastructure rebuilding, jobs, bringing jobs back to areas where their jobs had left, all sorts of spending, and that, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's part of why Wall Street rallied, correct, right?
It is. You saw steel stocks rally quite a bit, actually. If you look at the steel stocks, we saw some double-digit gains in companies like U.S. Steel. And the funny thing about that to me is it was also promised by President Obama with the shovel-ready projects, and it didn't really happen. So I'm not smart enough to know why it didn't happen with President Obama, but I suspect that, since I feel he's an honorable guy, I suspect that they were shovel-ready, but there's something in sort of the mechanism, the bureaucracy, where you can't just allocate the money and it gets going. And if that's the case, then it wouldn't happen with Donald Trump either, but the market certainly believes it will. Mm-hmm.
And defense spending was supposed to go up, and defense stocks were up as well this week, right?
Yeah, that's a solid play, I'd say, to watch defense stocks, because that's something where Donald Trump and the traditional wing of the Republican Party agree on also. Mm-hmm. That's a great point, Steve, is that, you know, a stronger defense. So companies like Halliburton, which also are involved in drilling, Lockheed Martin, a lot of those stocks rallied, and I think that one's justified for sure.
So I'm not smart enough to figure this out, so I'll ask you, with all of this spending that's planned and tax cuts, where is the money coming from? Are we just going to print more?
No. They wouldn't be able to print more because it's a different function of government. Theoretically, okay, the debt's going to expand initially. It has to, because you just can't make it up. But even John Maynard Keynes, who people tend to associate with the left, stated that lower tax, you can actually raise tax rates to a level where you get lower revenue than if you lowered them. There's several arguments out there about which formula works. He's not necessarily talking about supply-side economics, but he is talking about tax cuts to help grow the economy. Considering that the Federal Reserve has asked for help since Ben Bernanke from the fiscal side, which would be Congress and the president, this seems to be the first time they're going to get that. So it is theoretically possible to lower tax rates and raise tax revenue. It has happened. It happened with John Kennedy. It happened with Ronald Reagan. And it happened briefly with Bill Clinton as well. But it's a balancing act, because there has to be some spending cuts. And Donald Trump is also committed to not touch Social Security. So that means other entitlements, which are politically unpopular, and I'm not sure that they'll be able to get done. So I think you can see that the deficit and the debt will expand. There's just no way around it.
Another part of his campaign was that he wants to undo regulations, get rid of a lot of the red tape, the bureaucratic red tape, which I guess means a reduction in the size of government. And did the market react to that at all?
Yeah, you saw that in banking stocks. The number one, well, he has two particular plans that he has his eyes on. They're in his crosshairs. One is Obamacare, and the other one is Dodd-Frank. Mm-hmm. Obamacare needs to be replaced with something. So you can't just repeal Obamacare and say, okay, everybody go find insurance. It's just not, it's not realistic. Dodd-Frank, on the other hand, you could actually just repeal a large portions of it. Thomas Sowell, who's one of my favorite economists out there, said that when you put out a fire, you don't have to replace it with something. And that's how the banking sector would look at Dodd-Frank, is that it's just been a fire burning their profits and restricting their ability to actually do business and lend in areas where they would like to. So the pop in banking stocks was directly relatable to the potential repeal of Dodd-Frank.
Right.
Obamacare, on the other hand, it definitely hasn't been the success that people hoped, but it is now something that people are getting used to, the idea that there is some sort of universal health care needs to be made available. And I think that's a much taller ask.
I do have a question about Dodd-Frank. And wasn't Dodd-Frank implemented because of the activities by banks that resulted in Lehman Brothers and that sort of thing happening?
It is. What Dodd-Frank generally did, and I mean, it's a very big piece of regulation, so I'm not going to lie to you or your listeners and say that I've read the whole thing, but just to generalize, what Dodd-Frank did was essentially took banks out of businesses where there was fraud. And that's sort of like if somebody gets sick from your shrimp dish, they close the entire restaurant instead of making you cook better shrimp. So I think that's really been the complaints of the banking sector. They said, we're not allowed to do this business because some people committed fraud along the lines of it. And there was fraud. You know, if it were me, again, I'd rather see people go to jail and have the businesses continue rather than keep them out of the businesses. There was outright fraud committed in several areas during the financial crisis. Dodd-Frank, like a lot of regulation, in my opinion, overreached after the fact. And according to a lot of experts I follow, really, it didn't fix anything. It just kind of kept them out of businesses that they had already changed and sort of redid in order to not commit the kind of fraud they could go to jail for. So, you know, again, I don't know the details of the parts of the legislation that were restrictive, but it's pretty generally accepted that we're no safer from a credit perspective than we were before the crisis.
Bob Iacino is my guest. He's with Path Trading Partners here in Chicago. Let me ask you about biotechs. Biotech stocks were up double digits this week. What was going on there?
Well, there we've got so we had two things happen this week. We had Donald Trump get elected, and we had Hillary Clinton not get elected. Hillary Clinton definitely had pharmaceuticals and biotech in her crosshairs if she got elected. Things like the EpiPen and Mylan and some of the shenanigans over Valiant VRX. She had those things in her crosshairs, and she campaigned on those. So I think the generally accepted idea is that Donald Trump's going to be too busy taking care of some of the right side of the political ledger, things like Dodd-Frank and Obamacare that we talked about, to have his eye on the pharmaceuticals and the biotech anymore. So both of those rallied, and again, that one is understandable to me from a trading perspective.
On the subject of tech stocks, the FANGs, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, didn't do well yesterday. There's a little bit of recovery today, but what happened there?
You know, I'm a little baffled by that one, to be honest, Steve. There was some talk, and we talked about it on our podcast this morning, there was some talk that because there were accusations, some founded, some unfounded, that Facebook and Google were trying to affect the election by sort of manipulating news stories and searches and things toward Hillary Clinton. There's no reason to me that that should affect stock prices. I think that they had already just kind of disappointed the markets in general. For example, Apple guided down prior to the election. Google guided steady. Facebook guided lower. Amazon, there was a judgment against Amazon. A federal court agreed that they needed to reimburse parents for in-app purchases that their kids had made, somewhere to the tune of $30 to $40 million. So there were some things that were hitting those stocks prior.
Trump also, during the campaign, went after Bezos and Amazon. If my news sources are correct, he threatened some sort of antitrust activity against Amazon?
Yeah, those are the kind of things that I think are campaign rhetoric. And, you know, again, if you look at the stocks prior to the election, they were already on their way down.
Okay.
So there's nothing in my mind that said if those were on a had just began a new downtrend, there was nothing that happened during the week or during the election that would have changed that. You know, again, Apple's been down since they got it down. And, you know, those kind of comments by President-elect Trump are the ones that I think and I hope we don't see anymore. I saw an interview with former Vice President Dan Quayle today, and he said that the Oval Office is very humbling, and it shapes the person. The person doesn't shape the Oval Office. And I think Donald Trump looks humbled and potentially even scared when I see him in interviews right now, almost like, did I really just win this kind of an attitude?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that he calms down with things like that.
Bob Iacino of Path Trading Partners. Bob, how do people reach you?
You can find me at pathtradingpartners.com. You could reach us through our support. Also, iTunes and Google Play, Android. You can find our podcast, the Money Path Podcast, which is released sometime during the day on Saturday. We record it every Friday morning. Feel free to reach out. Love to talk to you.
Bob Iacino of Path Trading Partners.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
You're listening to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. And for Orion Samuelson, I'm Steve Alexander. And let's talk ag commodities. At the end of the week, corn, beans, and wheat were lower. To get the play-by-play, let's bring in Scott Shelody of TJM Investments in Chicago. And Scott, what do you look back on the week and remember the most?
Well, it's pretty hard if you're in this business not to remember the election the most. It moved the markets and what happens with capital moving around. But report that we'll also remember that we also had a report, a crop report that came out on the day of the election results, or the day after. So Wednesday was a pretty hairy day for us, and I guess all I can thank is the good Lord to keep that WASDE report, the crop report, from us until 11 in the morning, so we had a little bit of a chance to settle down with all the other markets before we got the news about the crops.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the election impact first before we get to the crop report from the USDA. What on Monday and even on Tuesday, before the election results came in Tuesday night, what was the mood, what was the market thinking?
Well, the market as a whole had worries about Donald Trump, and when initially a few weeks ago, when the news about that second round of emails investigation, the market tanked, and then it slowly but surely built its way back up. And then when she was exonerated the second time, we had a very big relief rally in the direction of Hillary Clinton as far as equities go. And, you know, a lot of times a lot of other things will kind of go with that, and that's what we saw. So the world was expecting if there was a Donald Trump result that the market would, sell off quite handsomely, and the world was not expecting that because we saw these markets kind of rally going into the election eve. And the night of the election, we saw the Dow Industrials down 800 points. And the listeners, a point of reference, by the time we closed on Wednesday, after it all said and done, we were up, 200-some-odd points. So we had a 1,000-point swing in the Dow, which a lot of people didn't see because it happened overnight, but that is very, very significant, and it's huge.
And then regarding the grain markets, the USDA report came out, and tell us about the surprises in that.
Well, as a farmer, we have a family farm. I wouldn't call myself a farmer, but as farmers say, big crops get bigger, and that's been absolutely the case this year. We keep inching production numbers higher. And with that, obviously, we get yields and bushels per acre keep going up as well. So that is what we got in the report. Everything was slightly bigger than expected, so the supply was slightly larger than expected. And so initially I thought things kind of held on pretty well. But then slowly but surely we broke the back of it and things started to melt pretty handsomely before we went home Wednesday night. So we saw some double-digit losses in some of the things we trade. And given the numbers that we got from the USDA on Wednesday, I think that was appropriate.
There were some other factors involved, too, including the weakness, or the strength, I should say, of the dollar, as well as exports. Tell us how that factored in.
maybe I've spoken about this before, but I mean, we trade a global market, so there's a lot of things that, you know, affect us. Yeah, and the dollar's probably been the biggest all year, I would say. I mean, obviously, outside of weather. And the dollar's been getting stronger, and it got much stronger with Trump coming in, which surprised as well as the equity rally did, and that's not good for commodities, right? So we kind of had some headwinds there. But, you know, there was something that was very significant that kind of happened today. There's been a story in copper. Copper had been kind of going higher before Trump was elected, but these shovel-ready jobs that people keep talking about, you know, copper's used in a lot of things around the world, and it's kind of a canary in the coal mine or a harbinger for future growth. If copper's going up, that means there's a demand today, which means they're going to be building something 6 months from now. And copper's been going through the roof. We kind of got a little bit of that built into our markets here because commodities across the globe have been getting hit for the last 5 or 6 years. They've been a very, very deflationary basket. But today we saw the Dalian Exchange, the Chinese exchange where they trade commodities over in the Far East, palm oil, soybeans, and copper just absolutely went off the edge of a cliff. And you'll notice, if you look, we came in this morning here in Chicago with beans up maybe 8 cents a dime. I can't remember exactly where they were when I walked in, but they were, say, call it 9-10 cents higher. And by the time the Dalian Exchange closed in China, some of our markets were, you know, beans were 15 cents lower. So we had, you know, something like a 25-cent turnaround in beans on the back of the fact that we saw heavy, heavy selling in China. And that's something that we never used to have to worry about. But now all of our screens, we think we these things up. We watch that dollar. We watch what other things are doing around the world. And we have to kind of build a picture. And it's now 3D instead of 2D so that we can, you know, the trade correctly and our customers right.
Is that reversal in China due to the dollar?
No. You know, look, I don't want to. There was a rumor, and this is purely rumor. I have no, but you know, that there was a big hedge fund that had to liquidate, and it might not have been anything that has to do with the market. Sometimes that just happens. I'm not sure if that was the case, but there was an inordinate amount of selling on a Friday afternoon, and especially a Friday afternoon where we had a, you know, a Veterans Day holiday where the banks were closed. We weren't trading bonds. We weren't trading euro dollars. We just had equities and commodities open. So the trading population would have been a little thinner as well. So it was kind of a odd situation, but yeah, when I got in early this morning, say about 6 o'clock or 5:30, we saw beans give us another healthy move higher, which I thought was very good. But at the, you know, by the time mid morning got around, we were 10 to 15 cents lower, so a 25 cent swing, which is sizable, especially on a day like today when I wouldn't expect it very much to be happening.
You talked earlier about the equity markets and how the markets seem to be set up for a Hillary Clinton win and possibly a Trump challenge to the results. And of course, it went the other way around, except for the challenge part of it. Would we have seen the same reaction had Hillary won?
No, I think the reaction would have been more of the same. I think we would have seen a continuation of Barack Obama. I think that her platform, at least the market was taking her platform as to be an extension of his term, so the market was very comfortable with that because they don't like not knowing what to expect. It doesn't mean they agree either way. It just the market just wants to know what to expect, and so the reason why the Trump win was initially very negative is because nobody knew what to expect. But very quickly, you know, and I blame technology for part of this because it didn't used to happen. Like this is my 29th year in the business. I didn't used to worry about it as much, but now with technology, things happen so much faster, and the market corrected after the surprise Trump victory, and the market looked at his policies and thought they were pro-growth, pro-inflation, and lo and behold, like I said, we had a 1,000-point swing in the Dow. I mean, that's just incredible. I mean, incredible in one day. So there's a ton going on in all markets, and commodities were there as well. This week was pretty tumultuous.
Right now, at the close on Friday, we're at 350 for corn, going up to 364 for July, and beans are at 978, going up to 10 in May. You know, let's dust off your crystal ball. Can you tell us, based on everything you've learned this week, what we should expect in prices as we go forward?
Well, I mean, because I've got a bunch of farmer friends, and we've got a farm ourselves, so I hate to say it, but unless we can build a demand story, if that dollar stays strong and we have Mother Nature comply, you know, it's low for longer, you know, that's the problem. We do such a great job of producing here in the States. Farmers are fantastic when it comes to getting the crops to the market and getting them out of the ground and growing them. we've had a couple of bumper, you know, big crops back to back here, and that's not been great for prices. So I think my biggest thing that I can pull out of my head is that, you know, since the dawn of time, or at least since the dawn of when we kept track of these things, farm income hit an all-time record high in 2012. Okay, so however many years that they kept track of that farm income, that's how many years it took to get to the all-time record high in 2012. But in four short years, 2016 will be the all-time record low.
Wow.
So there's probably anybody that's in the business out there that's listening is probably not surprised at all. It's been a very difficult year. And like I said, unless we get unless Mother Nature doesn't want to play ball this year, or we get some sort of big demand story, because my worry is that dollar stays strong, because we're the healthiest economy on the globe, right? And if that's the case, a strong dollar doesn't do anybody any good, especially in the commodity market.
Now let's talk some more about the Trump administration impact on the commodity markets. And he has loudly criticized trade partnerships, not only the proposed TPP, but also he wants to undo NAFTA, or to some degree. What if either of those things happen, or both of them happen? What impact would that have on commodities?
I think it would be. I mean, at some point in time, it's going to be hard to see these things trade a lot lower. They could, obviously, but those are going to be very volatile times. And if I knew the exact answer, I'd probably keep my mouth shut and just, try to make as much money as I could by myself. I think smart money is betting on stuff going a little lower, to be honest with you. I've seen some pretty big trades go through for corn and beans where, if we have a strong dollar and we don't have any new demand. I mean, we had good demand all year long in soybeans. That's kept us where we're at right now. But if Mother Nature does come through with another bumper crop, it's just, we've got old supplies that we have to get through. That's the problem. And I would say that I'd go out on a limb and say the same for crude. These things, we keep wanting to see the hyper spike in price, but I think there's too many things right now. There are too many headwinds for that to happen, unless obviously we get some sort of crop problem in the field with weather, or we wake up some new demand out of China. But right now, I think that it's steady easier as we go on, as long as the dollar's as strong as it is and we don't have any hiccups in weather. I do try to tell people, we just can't trade corn, beans, and wheat, no pun intended, in a silo anymore. There's so much happening around us that if the equity market is doing something weird and it might take capital out of our market, we have to be aware, because it could be hot and dry out there and our market's going lower because people are liquidating for money, So it's just it's a whole new ballgame. It's nothing like it used to be 29 years ago, that's for sure.
You mentioned crude, which was down about 3.25% today at $43.21, and gold was down $43 an ounce, thereabouts, at $12.23, about 3.5%. What was pushing those down?
We had some news come out about production of oil. The numbers came out that we were producing about 240,000 more barrels per day in October than we did in September. So that kind of punched it in the gut on the off this morning early on. And crude's been kind of setting the tone lately. So when it starts trading lower, a lot of things will kind of start to follow. And, gold, it's a place where people go for safety in times of when they don't know what's happening, or they look to hedge inflation. But we don't really have any inflation, and we don't really have Armageddon. Initially, gold had rallied very, above $1,300 on the worries of a Donald Trump, presidency. But now, when things start to settle down, gold loses its luster, and a lot of that gold is trading lower is because of that. The world does not seem as unsafe as it did, so people will get out of that gold trade.
Scott Chellity of TJM Investments, and for the week on the ag commodities, soybeans were down 0.3%, corn was down 2.3%, and wheat was down 2.7%. For the equities, the Dow was up 5.4%, the S&P and the NASDAQ gained 3.8%. That's the markets, sponsored by the CME Group. For Orion Samuelson, I'm Steve Alexander.